Start. You ready to start?
You're not going to wait for an hour at all?
Oh, they're coming. They're going to come. They're going to barge into the show about 10 minutes in.
Okay.
So I told them just to come on back.
So we're beginning.
Just the two of us.
This is official. Okay.
Here we are. Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio, also Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Deezer, TuneIn, all your podcast channels. It's me, Dark Mark, the goth comedian. I surprised my guests by starting the show, as I tend to do. But this is going to be a good one. This is going to be, I try to get people together that would not have met otherwise. And it is Halloween month. I'm wearing my Halloween 3 shirt. The best one. You think somebody?
I agree.
Yes. And, you know, we've got two people, or three guests that really epitomize Halloween in a weird way. By the way, Hannah, my co-host, could not be here. Grandpa's sick. Grandpa, get better soon. We want to take you trick-or-treating. My guest right now, we have, I can't believe I've got this guy, the esteemed screenwriter of Deep Blue Sea, The Italian Job, Valentine, and also the showrunner of the Showtime series that escapes me with Eric Stoltz. What was that? Out of Order.
Yeah.
With Felicity Huffman, William H. Macy, very critically acclaimed. And he just came out with, or he's coming out with a new movie. It's premiering, having its world premiere in November, is that correct?
November 9th at the Lemley.
Oh, and no, I Loves Me, Loves Me Not.
It's called Loves Me, Loves Me Not. It's going to play at the Studio City Film Festival.
That's
November
great.
November 9th, 1 o'clock. So we got that out there.
Okay. Yeah, we're gonna repeat that at the end, too, so everybody can see this. Now, this is a gender-neutral title. Was that intentional?
Loves Me, Loves Me Not?
Yes.
No, it's just from the game we pull the daisies off and throw it.
Right, but usually it's He Loves Me, He Loves
Me
Not.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I
see. She Loves Me, She Loves Me Not. But it's 2019, right. So it's like, They Love Me, They Love Me Not. You don't know what it is.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to be real careful.
So it wasn't intentional, but you hit on the right moment.
Yes.
You do not want to, you don't want to be binary these days.
No, we're very gender fluid.
Gender fluid. Oh, it's a gender fluid movie. I've seen it. I saw some gender fluid parts. But
yes.
Before I get started, let me do our sponsors really quick. Audible. Now, I'm sure you like audiobooks.
I listen to audiobooks. I used to live, split my time between Los Angeles and Arizona, and I would drive back and forth frequently, and audiobooks is what made it palatable.
Sure, absolutely. I just came back from Portland. I did the same thing. Here's what our listeners can get. A free book, but not only that, two free Audible originals. If you go to audibletrial.com/DMS for the Dark Mark Show.
Oh, shit, that's a good deal.
audibletrial.com/DMS. You can get any book you want, books on how to direct, how to write, horror books. They've got Edgar Allan Poe. They've got a play of Dracula with Tim Curry, Alan Cumming, and an all-star cast. They've got all sorts of things, plus the Audible originals. Alien 3, not a great movie, in my opinion, but William Gibson, and we're going to talk about studio development and hell and all that.
No problem.
William Gibson wrote a script for Alien 3. They never used it. Now Audible has got Michael Biehn, Lance Henriksen, and a cast together to act that out. That's an Audible original you can get free.
That's a very creative idea.
Yeah, Kate McKinnon has a play that she does on Audible with her sister. She's great. Bob Newhart has an interview show. There's all sorts of things. John Lithgow's one-man play. Whatever you want. audibletrial.com/DMS. One book, two free Audible originals. And Doomy's Home Cooking, 1253 Vine Street, Culver City, Toronto, the best vegan food you ever had. Are you vegan?
No, I'm not. But
okay.
I wish I was. But
no, I'll tell you what.
I like meat.
This is the gateway to veganism because they've got it's vegan junk food. It's great. Do I look like I'm vegan? I'm not vegan. I love it.
Right.
Big Mac on a secret menu, chicken parmesan, shrimp po' boys. The nachos were voted one of the best nachos in L.A., one of the 10 best nachos. No meat. Go to Doomy's Home Cooking, 1253 Vine Street, right? Fountain and Vine. They've got a store in Culver City where they just added a seafood plate and a Sunday brunch in Toronto, Canada, where they probably have vegan poutine. I don't know. So, Wayne, the camera, we'll try this again. Hold on. I knew I was going to do that. I shut off the camera during the sponsors. So YouTube's not going to get the sponsors. I'll have to put that in the comments. Let me take this out of the way. right
now. So
you're
going to do sponsors now?
By the way, no, we just did it, so I'm not going to do them again.
Okay.
Okay, and we've got Mortis and Lillian are coming up, our old friends, Mortis, Devil's Reject, and Lillian Sin. Who knows, maybe we'll cast them in a movie soon. But Wayne, you've got an interesting career. Now, you reached out to me last week about your movie, which I saw and I really liked, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But the career that you've had is amazing. You started, if IMDb is to be correct, and you know everything on the internet is correct, you started as a script supervisor for the 80s show The Equalizer. Is that correct?
Yes, I was 22 years old and wasn't a script supervisor. I was writing scripts.
Right.
I was on the staff.
Oh, wow.
For The Equalizer, and then the year before that was a show called Cagney and Lacey.
Right, a esteemed Emmy-winning show.
Yes, won Emmys, and I wrote a TV movie that also came out at the same time, and that was a show that got a 33 share, which is today would be unfathomable.
They'd be giving you the bank for that. What was that TV movie?
It was called Strange Voices, and this is a very 80s cast. Nancy McKeon.
Okay.
And Valerie Harper.
Okay. Wow. Facts of Life.
Facts of Life and...
And Mary Tyler Moore and the Valerie Show and the late, great Valerie Harper.
She just passed
away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But so based on that TV movie you got on the Cagney and Lacey staff...
It was sort of... wrote a spec Cagney and Lacey.
Okay.
Well, I guess I go back a little bit if you want me to.
Yeah, yeah. I want it all.
So I went to USC Film School.
Right.
And I was very driven there. I won a student Emmy. And but that didn't do me necessarily any good. I wrote spec script. And the spec script I wrote got me an agent and a lawyer. Because basically spent like over a year just rewriting and rewriting it, making
right.
it very solid. It was really sort of well done. It wasn't commercial at all, but it was well done.
Right.
That script got me a job offer to write a TV movie for ABC. Wrote that, got fired from that because they got fired. It died.
Okay.
And then, but that script got me to do another script called Strange Voices for NBC,
right.
which got made. And but also after having written some movies of the week, my agent said, "Hey, have you thought about doing TV series?" And I was like, "Well, that's not as cool, isn't it?" He said, "Well, it pays a lot more."
Right.
So I wrote a spec, Cagney and Lacey, because it was a show that I liked.
Right.
And
at the time, it was one of the biggest shows. It was definitely one of the most prestigious shows that won the Emmys and things.
Yeah. Yeah. The actors were incredible.
Yeah.
And so from there, that script got me on Cagney and Lacey, writing episodes for them. And then I wrote a different spec script for a TV movie that didn't get made, but that script for that TV movie got me to work on The Equalizer.
Okay. All right.
Because The Equalizer didn't like Cagney and Lacey. But
wait a second. The Equalizer didn't like Cagney and Lacey?
No, like the showrunner for The Equalizer, me having done Cagney and Lacey episodes didn't mean anything to him.
Right.
He had to read something that read more like a feature.
Right. And, The Equalizer, people know the Denzel Washington show.
Right.
Because I was going to say, it's like the old English white guy that would beat up everybody. But he's probably younger than Denzel Washington is now. But Denzel Washington, you know, he looks ageless.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but that must have been, I mean, as prestigious as Cagney and Lacey was, The Equalizer must have been a fun show to write for.
Really fun because you got to go to New York City.
Right.
And this was the days when there was... money was no object for TV studios.
And you're 22, 23 years old.
22, 23, and they get you a limo. You go to any place that you want to, and you flew on the MGM Grand, which was which existed back then. It was an incredible
aircraft.
And
so you're flying on private jets, taking limos.
Yeah.
And you're in New York City in the 80s.
It's a very profligate time. And
getting in all the clubs. Hey, I write for The Equalizer. Did you and Equalizer like go out and...
Ed Woodward?
Yeah.
Ed Woodward.
Did you guys all go out to the bars and do
well,
it all?
Ed Woodward went to a lot of bars. That's something for sure. I can't say that I went with him to them.
Oh, okay. Play the fifth.
But he didn't understand... It's interesting because he did this episode where he was in a car and then he's about to drive off, but first he takes a swig of whiskey right out of the bottle. And they were like, you can't do that.
Right.
You can't show that on TV. You have to have a seatbelt and everything. And but he was a super nice guy. There was an actor that was on the road. I won't say who he was, but well-known actor. And he said, I can't write this scene as you've written it.
Right.
And, you know, I'm very young and stuff, and I'm very nervous. And I thought, oh, no, what am I going to do? And Ed Woodward steps right up, and he says, I can say the line. So Ed Woodward was able to take his line.
Oh, that's great.
That was actually kind of stilted. It was about, that's the spot where the guy shot me in the hallway. He was able to somehow work it. He says, that's the spot where you were in the hallway. He did so well.
Right.
And he was it was kind of a hero to me to do that instead of just capitulating.
That's great. He stuck up for the writer.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. Now, USC Film School, one of the most prestigious film schools. I know John Singleton went there. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's – that's the only one off the top of my head that I can remember. But
yeah, little people like George Lucas and
right.
That kind of –
Oh, that's right, George Lucas.
John Carpenter.
John Carpenter. And now, they had Emmys. Did they have Oscars?
They had student – what did you mean?
You said you won a student Emmy.
Yeah, student Emmy.
They have student Oscars?
They did have student Oscars.
So they had separate TV and movie?
Yeah.
Okay. And TV, like you said, you saw that was where the money was, or?
The spec script that began it all felt like a TV movie. It was about black and white sharecroppers in the 1930s, and it's not commercial at all, and so it read like a TV movie.
Right.
And then after writing these TV series, I felt like I was kind of confined, because TV series are great because you get to hear your words every week. And they're also great because, you know, in features, you write a feature script, it'd be years, decades, and all that stuff before it can get made. But in TV series, they get made all the time. But they're still confined. You know, you're limited to what you can get for that $1.8 million budget. That's what it was back in the Equalizer days. And So
now how do you get from that? Now how do you get the job? And this kind of goes into the horror and the season. How do you get the job for Deep Blue Sea, the feature film?
Deep Blue Sea.
The shark movie with Samuel Jackson gets eaten. And
yes.
LL Cool J, and I got to watch that one again. I remember it's good.
It holds up really well, and it was LL Cool J's first role, and so he frequently comes up to me and says, oh, you're the guy who started it all, and he's very thankful, very, very nice guy.
Oh, really? Your homie's with LL Cool J?
Yeah. He's very serious. He's very religious.
Oh, sure.
And,
well, to have the rap and the acting career and everything else that he's doing, game show host, everything, he's definitely hard worker. There's no question.
He did a rap song for Deep Blue Sea that plays over the end credits.
Right.
It's really a good song. But, so with that job, it was one of those things where Warner Bros. Was looking for someone to do a rewrite of an existing spec script.
Right.
This guy, Duncan Kennedy, he wrote a spec script, Deep Blue Sea, and sold it for a lot of money. And then they kept hiring different writers to make it different. And then they sent it to me. And I had a bunch of theories, and what I did is I sort of had my notes and went in to have the meeting with the producer and director, because he already had the director attached.
Rennie Harlan.
And so what happened was they were about to decide if they're going to build the sharks or not.
Mm-hmm.
The sharks, to build them, are millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
So they were like the pay-or-play people with the sharks. And the only way that they could... Welcome.
Yeah, Mortis and Lillian here. I'm sorry about that. So go ahead.
The only way that they could, they would have to green light the movie at the same time that they green light the sharks.
Right.
So basically, had a script, and they needed to get it figured out before, it was basically over Christmas.
Right.
And so went in, had a meeting with them, and said, basically, in the original spec script and other drafts by other people, the sharks, it was more like the Marines were coming over to destroy these sharks.
Okay.
And they had grenades, and they had all sorts of ways to kill them. And I thought, and they were all professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pitched the idea of them being all blue collar, regular workers, make it more like Alien than Aliens.
Got it.
And so pitched different things and pitched this idea of this chef, later played by Ella Cujay,
mm-hmm.
being stuck in his own oven when a shark was attacking the oven and hit the switch to make the heat turn on in the oven. And all that stuff was pitched early on to give them an idea of the type of action that I wanted.
Right.
And so to keep it more at a sort of realistic level. I was saying realistic for Deep Blue Sea is ridiculous, but...
slam bam action movie and more of a thriller.
Yes, exactly. As I said, we felt it was more like to make it more like Alien,
right?
Than Aliens,
because sharks. I mean, it seems a little cruel to be hunting down sharks like that and having like a SWAT, you know, Navy SEALs go out and just try to hunt down sharks. That seems a little politically incorrect. Now, if the sharks go attack, that's one thing. But if you're just gonna have a bunch of people like coming out for sharks, yeah. What I read on Deep Blue Sea is that yeah, the sharks were so realistic, and some of it was CGI, but most of it was models.
So it was there was a shark I was able to ride on top of the fake shark and go around the little pool that they had.
Oh, that's crazy!
I mean, the movie couldn't have been made if it wasn't for the Titanic, because the Titanic had these incredible sets. That could, water would come up and come down.
Right.
Doing it so they shot in the same set as the Titanic was shot.
Yeah. If you might as well use it again.
Exactly.
Right.
The other thing about Deep Blue Sea is that, at least I've been told, that Ella Cujay was the first black person in a horror movie to survive to the end. Now, you may be able to think of something else, but that's what people have posted that before.
Well, Blackula, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, it's very rare, and it was very surprising. And from what I understand, in some of the scripts, he wasn't supposed to survive.
Well,
maybe not yours, but I know that wasn't Saffron Burroughs supposed to survive, and he was not.
She would. Saffron Burroughs was supposed to survive, and Ella Cujay and Thomas Jane.
Okay.
I had argued all through the writing of the thing, all through these meetings and stuff, with Warner Brothers and Randy Harlan. That Saffron Burroughs should die because she was the one that created this monster.
Right.
And but they shot it not that way. They shot it in a way she did live. Mm-hmm. And then when they handed out those cards that they do for...
test screenings.
For test screens and stuff, one of them said, "The bitch must die!" Exclamation point.
That's great.
So...
Now, in a movie like that...
They shot
you,
it
are,
one day to her being killed.
Are you on set for that?
I was on set. Well, it depends. On the Deep Blue Sea, I was on set some of the time, but not all the time. An Italian Job, I was on all the time in Italy and in L.A.
Okay.
And on TV series, you're on the set a lot. It just depends on the project. You got to get along with people, though.
Right.
You got to get along with the director. You cannot, if an actor comes up to you and says, what do you think or whatever, you got to direct them to the actor.
Right.
You say something extremely positive but not specific, because you don't want to be directing.
Right.
Directing.
Now, did you get along with Rennie Harlan?
Rennie Harlan was a great guy. We got along really well.
Yeah, I've never heard a bad thing about him. And from what I understand, this was kind of a comeback for him, because he had Cutthroat Island and Long Kiss Goodnight was a hit, but
right.
He needed, he was still trying to get earning his way back.
Yeah. Well, he did a terrific job.
And now he's in China making movies in China, from what I understand.
Yeah, right. I haven't seen him for a while. They re-showed at Deep Blue Sea at the, the silent movie theater that is closed down.
Yeah,
now.
I love it.
But they screened it there, and a lot of people came out.
Come on in. This is Mortis and Lillian. Like I say, I try to have people. This is Wayne.
Hi.
How you doing? Hello.
The esteemed screenwriter of Deep Blue Sea, Valentine, and The Italian Job.
Nice.
And his new movie, Love Me, Loves Me, Not. Oh, well, thank you. And I think Wayne's going to probably do this. Anyway, so we were just talking about the Deep Blue Sea and all of that. But Mortis is here. Mortis, the Devil's Reject.
Hello.
I was just listening. Now, wait a second. Now, I'm trying to get you in frame here. Oh, okay. Because you got your dolls here.
there we go.
Yeah, last time, there we go. I got your face there. It's just the camera's focusing on your head. What's do you have a name for that head? Or?
This is Fred.
Oh, hi, Fred. How are you? Fred doesn't talk. So, Mortis, last time, I forgot the last time we saw you, the last time you two were in the studio was Valentine's Day.
Really?
And now it was right after Valentine's Day, and now it's right before Halloween.
Nice.
Now, Halloween, it's the most wonderful time of the year, isn't it?
Yes, we're just swamped.
Yeah, well, that's great. Because last time we were talking, we left that off. Lillian was actually just about to audition for Batcave, and now she's a regular there. Or not. But I don't know what happened there.
She performs there, just taking some downtime at the moment.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, you guys have... there's been so many shows.
A lot of things have happened.
A lot of things have happened since February. A lot of things have happened since Saturday, apparently. A lot of things have happened since February. I saw you guys at the Whiskey open for Scold.
Yeah.
Scold, the industrial band. He used to be in Marilyn Manson and came FDM. And you guys opened for him at the Whiskey.
Yeah, that was a blast.
And you had that because your stage show, which has always been extravagant, it's even more extravagant.
It's going to be evolving.
Mortis Dolls now.
Yes.
Not just one.
And we talked about this before, that eventually the stage show is going to have the whole entire set where there's going to be a bunch of girls on stage doing different things and other things will evolve.
Right.
So now we have it to where if we can't have all the dolls performing, we have the basic theatrical setup. So it's just like one or two girls. But when we have all five girls, we have the full production running with the full stage show.
Oh, so I only saw the semi-production with three girls.
Yeah, well, after the Whiskey show, we grabbed like... two more, and then four more. And one of the other grinder performers wasn't able to make it to that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then when we play characters down in Pomona, we do the full show there, and that's just a blast. Fire breathing and everything.
Oh, wow. Fire breathing. Now, do you breathe fire, or does Lillian breathe fire?
Neither of us breathe fire.
Somebody else does?
Cinder breathes fire, and Delaney breathes fire.
Ah, of course. Well, with a name like Cinder, it makes sense.
Cinder's awesome.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you got $5. Now, you don't get jealous, do you?
Never.
No, okay. She likes the dolls.
Sharing is caring.
Okay, so you like being on stage with four other girls or three other girls?
It's fun.
Now, I know that you're so extravagant. It looks like you're going to be doing some extravagant things tonight. But I know that really you're a little shy. But it doesn't show on stage. But so I guess sharing the stage with a few girls kind of maybe helps you relax and you can kind of get into your own space.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Considering they're all friends of hers too, that she works with here and there.
Yeah, well, that's even better. It's not just random girls that you picked out of the crowd.
Well, no, that'd be creepy.
Well, you're Mortis the Rebels Reject, isn't that the point? There's creepy and then there's creepy.
Yeah, we don't want to come off like Harvey Weinstein or anything.
Right.
Like
there's hashtag Me Too Creepy, and then there's I'm a metal musician who does weird things on stage. Creepy, and you've got the dolls. I would imagine. For Halloween, are just going crazy.
Well, right now, the dolls even have their own stuff going on, too. So we're basically doing some of the theatrical stuff, and then maybe one or two dolls are performing. Some are performing at Dark Harbor. Some are doing Universal Horror Nights. Others have their other gigs going on here and there. So it's just a very tight schedule.
Oh, wow. So you're the dolls that you make.
Oh, the dolls I make.
Yeah.
We're going to be, after Christmas... trying to do some production with those and making about 50 different ones and then posting them for sale on the website along with all the other new stuff coming.
Right. And the other thing that last time we were talking about is that you were coming out with a new video.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all the proceeds were going to go to support mental health.
Yes, we're going to be doing that one in the winter. We've been having a hard time finding a location to do the video at. I have all the photographers set up, the cinematographer. I have the editors. I have all of the people who are going to be in the video waiting. It's just trying to confirm a place to do this for charity.
Now are you looking for a studio or are you looking for like a graveyard or are you looking for...
Well, for this particular song, we've been trying to talk with a certain event place in Hollywood.
Okay.
That'd be perfect to have this at, but we'll be talking more with them in the next couple of weeks, and I don't want to say anything so I don't put anyone on the spot type thing.
Oh, I understand.
But it's a place that hasn't let me play at their venue yet that we're working on.
Ah.
Which you already know this conversation, so...
It's things I can't talk about with you, Wayne. It's things I can't talk about with Mortis. Things I can't talk about with Lillian. But we're gonna get some conversation going. But because I have to be honest, and I was gonna say this, and I better get out of the way. Don't reach across the table and choke me, Mortis.
I'll just throw Fred at you.
Huh? Throw Fred at me. Whatever.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you now, when I see you, and I you're a very charismatic performer, and you put on a great stage show. But I have to say, when Lillian, especially when she puts on her pseudo Joker makeup, she's so captivatingly beautiful. Mm-hmm. I can't not look at her.
Well, that's the whole point.
Yeah, to get everybody not to look at you, or
well, you know, you got to have everyone involved with not just me, because some people may not understand the whole theatrical aspect and just the one singer.
Right.
And then when you bring in more people, have the full show going on, not only do you bring in the heavy industrial and wasteland type manner of it all, but it gives the crowd something else to focus on, and then we all interact together. Plus, it helps get the men more involved with the shows instead of them going, oh, I'm just going to bring my girl here because she wants to go see Mortis.
Oh, really? So there's a lot of that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that was the first thing I said when I came in here. Remember, I said, is she going to be here?
Yes, exactly. Wayne did say that.
How did you know about me?
Wayne, because I told him that you guys were going to be on the show.
Okay.
I saw the video. It was love at first sight.
Oh, okay. No, but give Wayne, because you have this look, and you have it too. But I think, honestly, Lily's is more effective. Give him the evil look that you have on stage. Let's see that.
Which one?
You know the evil look, the kind of the little evil side eye that you do.
Maybe you know. This one?
So look at that. That's that.
Yeah, that's crazy, right?
Yeah, crazy
that's
and beautiful.
Crazy.
You can't stop looking at it.
Gosh, your skull.
Yeah, see? And this is a guy, now she's perfect for a horror movie, I would say.
What's funny
she's
is,
perfect for
if
a lot
you
of
remember,
things.
I did the remake for Donald Farmer last year,
yes.
Cannibal Hookers, yeah.
Has that come out?
It's coming out this winter. It's already on IMDb, and they've been promoting it, and the video will be available for purchase. And then he's talking about remaking a couple others.
No, I think you should be in every horror movie is what I'm saying. I think you're scarier than a lot of people. I think if they do remake Nightmare on Elm Street, why not? You got the look. And by the way, speaking of horror movies, have you guys seen Valentine, the horror movie?
I've seen Valentine.
Valentine, you've seen it? Do you like it?
It's one of my favorite underrated horror films. It was
really?
It didn't get the what's the word I'm looking for here. It didn't get what it was deserved, and it was really good. I really liked it.
As you know, who wrote it?
Well, yeah. Well, I loved it for the simple fact that even though you might think you know what's going on, by the end you're like, wait, what?
No, I really.
And that's what I liked about it, especially at the time it came out. We had nothing but, and I'm not going to speak bad about Wes Craven or anything like that, but we just had a lot of too many wannabe horror films that just didn't live up to what the movie was supposed to
be.
Well,
it was very post-Scream.
Yeah.
And then Valentine came out, and it was so, you know, not that Scream was bad, but I Know What You Did Last Summer and all those other ones.
Too many thrillers, not enough horrors.
Right. Now, we're coming off Deep Blue Sea, and you did the Valentine first in the Italian Job, I'm thinking?
It was a Valentine first, yes.
Okay, so
Valentine began with producer Dylan Sellers was in an airport, and he saw this book and a novel.
Right.
And it said Valentine. It had like a mask and a knife or something like that. And he thought, very capitalistic, he thought, I can make a lot of money off that title, Valentine.
Right.
Even though they made things called Valentine
before. They had My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah. So, but he saw that, and he wanted to option the book. So he went into a meeting with Warner Bros. With the thing and said, you know what? Valentine's Day in 2 years is going to fall on a Friday. So we can have a great opening weekend. And that's how he sold it. None of the book is in the movie. Like,
that's what I've heard,
single word.
Yeah.
And
it's better for that, from what a lot of people have said.
Yeah, I wouldn't say anything bad about
The
esteemed novelist, but no, anyway, that's how it was purely a piece of commerce, which is, you know, but we had fun with it. It began as something that I was supposed to direct.
Right.
And then Artisan Pictures, who was going to do it, they had not done their big Blair Witch project yet, but they were active studio. And they just lost a lot of money on a Roman Polanski movie. And so they decided they couldn't, So Warner Brothers paid me to write it after I pitched it to them. Then Warner Brothers didn't want to make it, so it went to Artisan. Then Artisan was going to direct it, but they ran out of money. So I went back to Warner Brothers, and then Warner Brothers put it in production. That would be directing, but I got paid so much money not to direct that movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's very proud of it. But, you know, it was originally supposed to be more of funnier in the beginning. And but you know, I've heard people really like it. And I just heard from the other day from a woman who said that she broke up with a boyfriend on Valentine's Day, went out to see the movie Valentine's Day, and it lifted her spirits. So.
Oh, sure. Well, I related because the killer had a bloody nose.
Yes.
And I used to get spontaneous bloody noses.
So did I. That's where that came from. I used to get them when I was in high school.
Oh, really? Yeah, me too. Yeah, I turned out I had a broken septum and went to the doctor and got it fixed. But, yeah, you just would have bloody noses. So that's great. That's something we have in common.
That's right.
Wow. We bleed.
One of many things, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, but were you the one that
he thinks that we wouldn't have all met in other situations, but I disagree.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? But who knows? I mean, I know Mortis gets around, so who knows?
Yeah. You realize that everything happens by fate, and everybody knows everyone somehow in some way.
Mm-hmm. That's true. They know things. We touched on the occult last time, and you wanted me to play your song, was it 13 Dead?
I think so.
Yeah, and we probably will later... If I can, I got the phone here. But what is the number 13? People have told me different things. From what you know, what is the thing with the 13?
Well, for the whole thing with 13 Dead was it's actually referring to vampires.
Okay.
In most of the covens of houses, there's the 13 different houses together, and basically it's talking about 13 dead will return again. It's kind of like the masters will come back.
Right.
And in the other stuff, like the beginning of the song's talking about how one of them just got sick and tired of her husband being a cheating whore, and she poisoned him, walked out of the house, went back to her life. And the next part it's talking about, you know, while you go to sleep at night, Devil's Little Reject is out there slitting throats and having his fun.
Right.
And then it's saying, you know, don't worry. You know, there's no love, there's no respect. But they may be 13 cursed and they're 13 dead, but they will return again.
Okay.
And we have a song we're working on we're working on a new EP to come out next year, one acoustic and one hardcore.
Acoustic?
Acoustic.
Are you going to have the screaming metal vocals on the acoustic, or are you really going to sing this?
I'm going to sing it like in Gravebound. And, some of the songs will be just strictly acoustic, and if it's not strictly acoustic, it'll have violins, piano, cello, and then some will have full acoustic with maybe a little bit of synth behind it.
But okay.
It's all going to be acoustic guitars, and it's all going to be basic singing with a little bit of the echoes behind.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any type of screams, there'll be ghost screams, nothing hardcore.
Yeah. So I was gonna do my metal scream, but none of that stuff. And the other one's just going to be the Mortis, just the Mortis
basic,
that we know.
Yeah, the album's going to be called Roderot, which...
oh, nice.
Tattooed on my arm.
Oh, very nice.
It's actually a little bit of a mix between vampire and geekish. When I was in high school growing up, I did a lot of Vampire the Masquerade, Dungeons and Dragons, like most of us do. I liked the Toreador clan. They were the artistic people and stuff like that. And if you look at certain vampires through the years, there's certain clans that you're like, okay, this possibly could have happened. So I took that as my own, and I liked it. So later on in life, I flipped the name to give it my own twist on it, so it's Roderot. So the next album is going to be called Roderot, The Book of Blood, and it's basically about where I am now.
And you are, and by the way, you don't know Wayne, but Mortis is of Transylvanian heritage.
Really?
My family goes back to Romanian Gypsy.
My mother's family goes back to Hungary. But they would sort of do that, making fun, like...
Oh, okay.
I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Do you ever think of doing a vampire movie?
I would love to.
Yeah?
What do you think is the best vampire movie?
The best one? It matters on the type of style you're going for, but I've always liked John Carpenter's vampires.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't romanticizing anything. It was, look, we're this, you know? And it showed the hunter's perspective, the vampire's perspective, and how they just come back. My most favorite vampire film to date is still Bloodstone. And that was done, late 70s, early 80s? and they didn't use a lot of CGI. They just used
claymation. I think I've seen that one, Bloodstone.
Yeah, I'll check it out. It's really good. The lead vampire's name is Radu, and he's supposed to be the brother of Dracula.
Okay.
And he ends up getting cursed and being the way he is, and his whole family is all twisted, and he's got these long fingers, and he's like the traditional like Nosferatu, but he's got the long hair.
Nice.
He's kind of seductive, but still creepy. Yeah. And they made three of these, and it all revolves around this stone that he drinks out of called the Bloodstone, and it fills up, and there's a lot of things to it. But it was I think Full Moon Productions either did it or has the rights to it right now.
Okay.
But it was really good.
Right. And Lillian, what's your favorite vampire movie?
I like the ones he makes because we watch them together all the time. But yeah. As far as like
But besides comedy, besides that, yeah.
What was it? Vampire's Kiss, I think it is.
The one with Nicolas Cage?
Yeah.
Oh, you like that one?
That was funny to me. I liked it.
Okay. Mine, as I've said before, because I'm such an 80s nerd, the Hunger.
The Hunger?
Oh,
not Once Bitten?
Huh?
Not Once Bitten?
I like Once Bitten, but The Hunger always stuck with me. It just, yeah. just because it's like, it's a vampire movie, but it's like undercover vampire movie. Like, I didn't know it was a vampire movie when I watched it, and it was like, even after I saw it, I was like, wait a second.
Kind of like I Am Legend. You don't know it's about vampires until like really towards the end.
So they don't suck each other's blood, but there's a lesbian scene, and you know, it's David Bowie gets old, and it's good.
Yeah.
It's got that, you know, the Tony Scott.
His particular look.
Yeah, he's got that look. He's got the flowing curtains and the, yes.
They only come out at night. Nice. I think that's about vampires.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, so the Italian Job. Now, you did Valentine. You got paid a lot of money not to direct it.
Yes.
Now that could only happen on every project.
Yes.
Well, I would love for people to say, you know what? I'm going to give you a lot of money not to do comedy or not to do podcast. Just
right.
Yeah. Just trust me. I some people have been tempted to take me off the air and pay me a lot of money, but no. So.
Well, Valentine did very well.
Yeah.
It got back its money in the first weekend.
Yeah.
And then. You know, as a writer, you write a number of things that don't get made.
And you probably doctored up a lot of scripts that you haven't gotten credit for.
Doctored up some scripts, yes.
Is there anything you could say that you've doctored up that...
Have you heard of a movie called, let's see, it was Ben Affleck called Paycheck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
John Woo?
Yeah, so I was just brought in to rewrite the very end. The ending didn't test well.
Right.
And so they needed a new ending. So Sherry Lansing, the president of Paramount, called me up and said, I need you to have this ending. We want to shoot it next week.
And when Sherry Lansing calls you up on the phone, you're like, yeah
that's
sure.
not an all. It's not that common of event.
Yeah.
And so I had to think of something and did and pitch it to him. And, of course, a couple things had to change, too, that had already been shot. Just changed slightly. All the work was done in one day of shooting. And one of the things involved... not to get too much in the plot, but involved these pigeons being released into the sky. And instead of that, they weren't released. They were kept in their thing. Well, John Woo loves his shots of pigeons.
That's his trademark.
Not was it pigeons, the white ones.
Yeah, pigeons. Yeah. Doves.
Doves.
Oh, doves. You're right. You're
doves flying up to the air. So he was walking around, and he doesn't speak very English very well at all. And I could tell he wasn't happy with me, even though, you know, it wasn't my decision.
Was he
was basically forced to do that scenes, but it tested like 8 points higher, and so that was a lot, and that took away
my doves.
That's right.
And yeah,
not quite. Was that Italian accent there?
No, I could. Yeah, I was gonna do the bad Asian accent.
Probably
and
not.
Then I caught myself in the last minute.
Not today.
Yeah, no, you can't do that. Yeah, but where my dove? Yeah, I can't. Yeah, there you go. Now you got it. See, it made her laugh. So you did the Italian Job, which I haven't seen, but our producer Pete has seen, and you guys have you seen that?
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I try to avoid Marky Mark movies on principle, but I heard this one is good, though. And how did you... then you never saw the original Italian Job with Michael Caine when you got this movie, right?
Well, what happened is, Paramount sent me the original movie.
Okay.
They wanted to remake it pretty much because it was a hit in England.
Right.
And English people are crazy for this movie.
Yeah.
It's one of their favorite movies. Kind of the same way that someone might be crazy about... Cannonball Run, or about
original Death
Smoking
Race.
The Bandit.
Smoking—that's the one I was thinking of. Smoking the Bandit,
right.
that kind of way. If you look at it now you can look and go, why was I so crazy about it?
So it's like a car chase movie. It's like people like the cars.
Yeah, and so the original Italian Job was very popular, but it was a completely different idea. I mean, the original Italian had crazy stuff going on and stuff. But anyway, I'll be very careful because I don't want to put down that movie because English people love it.
Yeah.
And but the screenwriter of it was very nice. He was very complimentary to me.
Oh, that's good.
But so the Italian Job.
Because I've heard, before we get going, originally they put his name on the poster. That's what I read on IMDb.
Michael Caine's name?
No. The original writer of the Italian Job, they said that they wrote that.
Well, it says based on.
Yeah, but they didn't have your name initially on the poster and the billboards, and they corrected it, from what I understand.
I don't know.
Okay, that's what IMDb says. So.
Oh.
It was a while ago. It was 2003. They're forgiven.
Yeah. Then
I think Marky Mark had something to do with it. But okay, go ahead.
They sent me the original film, and of course I said I loved it.
Yeah.
But I'd like it to be totally different.
Right.
And sort of created these characters that all came together in the film and stuff and gave them an idea of the type of action I wanted and how it would not be a CGI. But right. Anyway, stuff like that. And
your type of adaptation is to throw everything away and do something new.
Well,
Valentine, that's what you did.
Yeah, the
Italian Valentine. Job, that's what you did.
Deep Blue Sea's that way, too. Yeah, so I guess so.
And they came out good. Why not?
Yeah. Anyway, so got the job at Paramount, and when he wrote the draft, and they sent it to John Goldwyn, who was the president of production, he read that and said, this could be our summer tempo movie for this coming summer.
And it was.
And it was.
Now, Jason Statham plays Handsome Bob? Handsome Rob. And you know a Handsome Rob. That's based on your friend.
Yes, my friend Handsome Rob, who was one of those people, and that's why with Handsome Rob, the real Handsome Rob is really handsome.
Yeah.
Now,
no offense to Jason Statham,
but I didn't want, I mean, it was ideal to me because in my mind, Handsome Rob would not be
Jason Statham.
Would not be super handsome. Well, Jason Statham now is a sex symbol and everything.
Right, but he's more ruggedly.
Yeah,
so Handsome Rob is like Lillian. When she walks in a room, everybody stops and looks at
them. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But all those characters were fun to think up and to do.
Okay.
And that was one of the few arguments that got into Paramount was there was the scene in the Italian Job where all the main characters drive up and meet. And in so doing so, we learn a lot about them. And they have all these shots of different little stories about them, vignettes.
Right.
And that would have been very expensive. It was very expensive to film. And so the studio was looking for ways to bring down the price. And I basically said, I really, really think that these scenes should remain, and I gave my reasons. And part of the trick is to do that once. You can't be telling them all the time. You can't be having a hissy fit on every little change they want to make.
Right.
You get pretty much one, so you got to pick it carefully.
Okay, I'm duly noted. That's why you're a successful writer, and I haven't made it yet. But now I know. Pick my battles. were you on the set for that?
For Italian Job?
Yeah.
Yes, quite a bit. It was really fun because they shot, they closed down Hollywood and Highland for 5 days, which pissed off a lot of my friends.
I heard about that, yeah.
And so I went down when they were shooting the thing, and there's a scene where there's an explosion, a Brinks truck falls through the cement, and all sorts of crazy things happen. And they were filming that day, and I saw these tourists that were leaned up against the fence to keep them away, but they were looking at it, and they were looking at like, this must happen every day in Hollywood. Sure. That's where they make movies. And I was walking around, I was thinking, this is just what I wanted when I was a 12-year-old. I wanted to make a movie and blow a lot of shit up.
Yeah.
And so I had accomplished that goal.
That's great. The other thing about the Italian Job, I was reading about this, Ed Norton.
Yes.
Great actor.
Yes.
But apparently he owed Paramount a movie. Like he signed a contract. And the Italian Job was the movie that they owed him, so he did it. And I'm sure, and I've heard he's good in it. But
Ed Norton was a real dick to me.
Okay, let's see it up. This is what I was getting to.
Yeah, he had made this movie for Paramount, and it was his first movie that he started and made him a star.
Prime of Fear.
But in order for him to get that role, they basically said, if we get you for two more movies and said what the price was and stuff, set in, which is common. when you have an actor that's unknown. So anyway, he kept, Sherry Lansing kept offering him roles, and he kept turning them down. And finally she said, I think you're perfect for this. This is going to be a good movie. You got to do this one. Well, he then proceeded to tell everybody that would listen how he was forced to make this movie.
Right.
And they had increased his price beyond what the original contract was. So, you know, he was still paid millions of dollars. But he, and when I met him on the set, he looked at me as if I was the one that forced him to do it.
Oh, geez.
And he just had this thing. And I've heard other stories, but...
Well, he has a penchant for changing his lines. Did he dare do that with you on the set?
No, because I think he just didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
But what happened was the director, F. Gary Gray, was very smart, and I learned something from this.
Yeah.
Ed Norton was being a real... Ed Norton said he wouldn't carry a gun. He had all these sort of things.
Right.
Arguments involving his mustache, all sorts of stuff. But what the director said to me was, at the end of the day, he's going to give a hell of a performance because he will.
Right.
And he's a professional and, you know, he's not about to, you know, not do a good job. And he did a really good job.
F. Gary Gray, good director.
Yes. A lot of fun. Yeah. A lot of good guy to be around.
And the other story I heard about Ed Norton, and this is on IMDb, and if this is true, I can't believe it, but apparently because it was a big hit, the producer sent everybody a gift. And Ed Norton sent it back and said, give this to somebody that you like or somebody that likes you.
Well,
can you either confirm or deny that?
I don't know that story, but I will tell you a story that I'd been told.
Yeah.
Which is Edward Norton was acting with Brad Pitt in...
Fight Club.
And Brad Pitt does his take, and Ed Norton looks at him and says, they pay you $6 million to do that?
Ed Norton's a dick,
but
a great actor.
Now, I didn't see that, obviously, for I'd been told that story.
Right.
But it made sense with the other stories that I'd been told.
That's interesting.
Especially about losing Hulk.
Oh, yeah, we don't even want to talk about that. Enough of that, Ed Norton. We want to talk about you. Now, what was that, when you were a kid, Mortis, what was your best Halloween costume?
I don't know. We back when I was a kid, there wasn't really a lot of choices.
Yeah.
Kind of dating myself there, but you know, you had the vampire.
What was your favorite? What was the one year you're like, okay, I got it down this time?
Well, I really liked the original Dracula.
Right.
So every year we would do a mix between Bela Lugosi's Dracula and Christopher Lee's Dracula.
Right.
Because my mom got sick and tired of me wearing the same one every year.
Okay.
But that was the main one as a kid.
Very avant-garde, very ahead of its time.
And then when I was a teen, I started working at a haunt, AV Scare. We used to do it out in Antelope Valley.
Right.
And it ran for about 10 years. And we had people from Knott's coming up. Ricky Rocket used to come out all the time, and a couple other people. He'd bring friends.
Wow.
And I developed this character called Zippy. And it's this kind of a clown-type character mixed with a kind of background of magic and demon, but it was a really complex character.
Did you have a pinhead or?
I have.
Like Zippy the cartoon?
No. He looks like a basic person. He's got like carvings all over his body of runes. His eyes have been kind of like gouged.
Mm.
We're going to be working on the filming next year for this movie. We're in pre-production right now, getting the script ready, and I have the location set. I have my people who's going to be filming it. We're just doing some things because we're going to be in talks next month with one major horror film company, which I can't say their name on the air. And I'm in talks with another one that wants me to possibly do a similar thing, but television.
Come on, you talk shit about Ed Norton. You could say it.
I'm kidding. Yeah. So if everything works out well.
How many days do you usually have for a film like that?
The film for The Night He Came to Town, which we're going to be working on, the way it's written, I could probably have it all filmed, wrapped up, and done in a month.
Oh, including the editing and everything?
Yeah.
Pre-post and post.
Mm-hmm.
So how many shooting days are you thinking?
I could do 2 weeks of shooting with no issues and have it done.
Right.
Because it's very simplified.
I only had 14 days of shooting for Loves Me, Loves You Not.
Loves Me, Loves You Not. I was going to get to that now.
It's tough.
Because Lillian, now you've met your love. He's right here, Mortis. But you probably, how did you know that you were in love with this guy? I know there's last time we had the whole story. You were in Chicago. He's here. You moved here. Was it right when you saw him, or did it grow? I mean, was there a magic moment?
Let's just say the stairway at the airport will never be the same again.
Right, right. So this is the
it's
story.
Slippery now.
A little slippery. Anyway, the story is, and I was just listening to it again. Is they met on Facebook, and you living in Chicago, you were living here in L.A., and she flew out, and it was just they were connected, and are still connected to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's now they're. They're partners, they're together, they're collaborators, they're lovers.
And next week will be our one-year anniversary from our wedding.
Oh, that's right. I did see that, and congratulations. Maybe I should ask you this.
Okay.
What's your favorite romantic comedy or romantic movie? Doesn't have to be a comedy.
Favorite romantic.
Let's, Lillian, what's yours?
Let's go there.
I mean, most people wouldn't think it's a romantic comedy, but Voices.
Voices, yeah. That's Ryan Reynolds is a serial killer who has delusional problems. He hallucinates, and his therapist gives him pills so he can see the world for what it is. But when he's not taking them, everything's bright, everything's cheery. His cat and his dog talk to him, and some other stuff.
Well, that sounds romantic,
right?
But that's an unconventional romantic movie. As is, He Loves Me, He Loves Me Not. Your new movie. You finally get to direct a movie.
Yeah, well, I directed the Showtime limited series. I directed 3 of the 6 hours.
Which was out of?
Showtime.
Yeah, well, the name of the show was?
Out of Order.
Out of Order with Eric Stoltz, Felicity Huffman, William Macy. And they would have to take my international podcasting license away if I didn't ask you about Felicity Huffman and what happened at your alma mater, USC.
Yes, well... yeah, first I was impressed that people were saying at the prestigious USC, but
it's not prestigious.
No, it is. But
I didn't think it was that prestigious. Ivy League
film school is prestigious.
That you have to.
I think the other rest of the school is really good. It's just a matter of it's not Harvard,
right?
But anyway, Felicity's a friend of mine, and so I'm certainly not going to do any dishing on her.
Yeah,
we have talked about it, and
it's tough. Yeah,
and and I think that I'm a little worried. This idea that society has become a decider of whether people's careers should be ruined or not.
Well, I think she's handled it so well and so gracefully. I don't think her career is going to be damaged at all.
That's definitely what I.
And Becky, I don't know, but Felicity, I think she's going to come out okay. Plus, I mean, what a marvelous actress she is.
She's an incredible. She was the best actress I've worked with.
Right.
Or neither things I've written nor things that I've directed.
She's, right.
We did a scene where she was reading from a diary about her childhood, about an event that was terrible in her childhood. She's reading this thing to her husband, played by Eric Stoltz.
Right.
And so she reads it, and of course she wrote it out herself. And I'm looking at it before we shoot, and I say, oh, "What's this smudge?" Because there's a smudge on it. And she said, "Oh, those are my tears from when I was rehearsing it." So when she was rehearsing it alone, she cried on the on the thing. I mean, it's just she really goes there. Some actors they can come in and out, and be relaxed between things and stuff, but with her. You got to keep it really quiet, and she really is. She's there.
Just stay out of her way, and she'll become the character.
Stay out, yeah, and she's just amazing.
And her husband's the same way, William Macy. Or?
Yeah, her husband's just—he's just a lot of fun. He's just really super good guy. He was very supportive of the film.
Yeah.
And
I remember the billboards for it, and I definitely want to see it. I hear it's great. And
it's on Amazon Prime.
Okay, I'll check it out.
At least the first 2 hours are on there. And the other thing is that William Macy, he just is so in love with Felicity. Like we were filming the scene where Felicity's in a boxing match, and he looks at me and goes, "Isn't she incredible?" And he just, he really meant it.
See, these two do the same thing. It's one of those things. I can't wait to find my partner like that, which is where your movie Loves Me, Loves Me Not, kind of, it's a young woman. And the actress, the main actress, her name escapes me.
Isabel Chester.
Amazing. She's fantastic.
Yes.
And she hasn't been in a lot of things.
No, I was at USC, and which I sometimes teach at, and I was walking from my class, and I saw that somebody was showing a movie, a feature that he made. He had graduated from USC several years ago, and he showed this feature, so I just stepped in and saw it, and I had already written the script with Lisa Penny. I'd already written it, and then I start to see this movie, and it has this actress in it, Isabel, and she is so incredible. I'm watching this thinking, that's who I want, because what I wanted was a young Heather Graham, and she was...
Looks why she lives a little bit, there's a little bit of resemblance.
A little bit like her, and I shouldn't even say a young, I mean...
Yeah.
She's not that old.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Actually, I had approached her about doing it herself, the actual, but she, Heather, but it didn't work out. Anyway, so I saw this, I'm watching the movie, I'm going, don't fuck it up, because it's so, her performance was so good, and I just, I was rooting for her, because, and that's who I wanted, and that's who we went after. She's the only actress we offered it to.
Well, yeah, it's kind of a throwback to the 90s independent movies. And, you know, as far as romantic movies I like Annie Hall to me is the gold standard, and, you know, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I like things that are a little little off and a little quirky.
Well, again,
and this definitely is.
When that's, yeah, you're doing favorites. When it's, for me, when that's quirky and offbeat is Harold and Maude, which is made in 1969.
Sure.
And just an incredible romantic comedy, dark, dark romantic comedy. And that's also my movie I consider to be a dark comedy.
Sure.
And it's about, it's sort of a, it's not that it's an atypical story, because it's about a woman trying to find Mr. Right and realizing that she has to love herself. But.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Go ahead. We were just, we just have to lock up. No, go ahead.
So, yeah, it's about a woman who's trying to find Mr. Right and runs into all these sort of crazy situations. And what had happened was I had gone to an Al-Anon meeting.
Right.
Al-Anon meetings where you go to if someone, either a wife or a father or a son, is an addict, and how it makes your life crazy. And so it's about going to meetings to try to work that out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in a meeting, Al-Anon meeting, and there was this woman there too. And I remember distinctly, she raised her hands up, her sort of shirt rose, and you saw the belly button ring. And she started telling her story. So, of course, I paid a lot of attention.
Right.
And she started telling the story of some crazy stuff going on in her life. And I realized that we had a lot in common. I talked to her afterwards. We had a lot in common that we both were going through stuff. But also, she was able to see the humorous side to these things that if you played them as in your mind as straight dramedy and tragedy, would have been depressing.
Mm-hmm.
But she was not depressing. She was able to laugh and stuff. And in the script, you see they call the different characters different
right,
names.
Right, Mr. Nice Guy. There's
there's Mr. Dead Guy.
Mr. Dead Guy, yeah. And David Chokichi from Baywatch is in it. Don DeLuise's son, not Peter, but...
Tom?
Huh?
Tom?
No.
Don.
Don DeLuise.
No.
No, Dom DeLuise's son. Is it David?
David
DeLuise is in it. Paul Rodriguez is in it.
Paul Rodriguez is in it, and
he's terrific in it.
He's really good.
And it's somebody who I wish Hannah was here, because Hannah would really relate, and I think she really liked the movie. Hopefully, I'll take her to the premiere. But it's about somebody that just thinks that she meets the right guy, and things just don't work out.
Yeah, they're either unobtainable,
things happen, and you think it's going one way, and it goes another way.
Yeah,
and I thought it was really good. It was a good watch. I think it ended strong, and I think the ending, which did touch me, inspired by Hillary and Jackie, possibly.
Hillary and Jackie.
Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
There's a similar scene. I'll tell you about it after the show. But it did touch me, and she finds herself at the end is basically what happens.
It's also a very good, diverse cast.
Absolutely, yeah.
We have.
I didn't know there were that many black people in Malibu, I got to be honest. Because it's set in Malibu, and like everybody in her apartment building is black or Russian. I didn't know what was going on. Including Natasha,
and Persian.
And Natasha, I think, is how you've found out about me.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And then, the fact is there's only about 4% of white people, and 4% non-whites in Malibu.
Right.
And, but I decided sometimes you have to decide whether you want to do things the way they are or the way they should be.
Right.
And so I just decided to...
This is Malibu as it should be.
Yeah. And we had an actor
who was... Funky Malibu.
Yes. And
Malibu is soul.
Yeah. And Malibu does... The people, the Denizens of Malibu have a particular style to them themselves. It's sort of the rich kids.
Yeah.
That the trust fund babies.
Do you live in Malibu?
Do stuff. No, I lived in Pacific Palisades for a while.
Okay.
I've never actually lived in Malibu.
Now, loves me not, and we're gonna talk about the premiere in a second. But I know that Lennon's chomping to do some stuff, but or maybe not. You don't want to? We might do a little thing, but we're wrapping it up. But do you have a distributor for this? How are you going to get distributed?
Well, the hope is that you play at this festival, maybe at AFM. Mm-hmm. There's different. There's different ways to do it. I have a person right now that's looking for the ideal person to be a seller for the film. And so we'll see. It was completely financed by myself and my brother. So I hope we'll get some money for it, or Thanksgiving's going to be very awkward.
Okay. All right. Well, distributors, look out, because I think it's a good movie. I really think that this is something that if you're flipping by on Amazon Prime or Netflix, You're gonna pop on this movie's gonna get your attention and you're gonna like it.
Yeah, it has it's edgy in places, has nudity.
Yes.
And it's
male, female, and other.
But it's also very comedic.
Yeah, it's the best kind of movie. It's the kind of movie I like. It's real. It's funny, but it's not romantic comedies. Here's what my problem with it. It's all about the situation. You don't get to know the people. This one, you get to know the people.
Thanks.
That's why I like it. You don't want to do anything, Lillian? Any crazy, wacky hijinks? A little quick thing before we go. We don't have a lot of time.
But... I was going to do Human Blockhead, but I realized I don't have my nail.
Ah, that's right, because you do have the hammer here somewhere.
Yeah,
but,
and then I thought the nail was in the box, and it's gone.
Okay. To check.
But that's okay. So that's all right, because next time you're on, you can nail a nail into her head. I'm sure.
Okay.
No, go ahead. No.
Well, I mean, what would I do?
Oh, you're referring to the staple game.
No,
I might have seen that on your top 10.
Yeah.
Normally, I have a nail. It's basically.
Oh, so you don't have other people nail it?
No, and it's from the tip of my finger to the bottom of my palm of my hand, and I put it in my nose, and I use my hammer, and I hammer it into my face.
You did it on this show?
She's done it on Martyrs' show. We've had other people do weird things like that. Yeah. On
I do it in my events. And then I also do like palm torches where I dance with fire. And then I take the fire and I do flushing on my skin and then I eat it. And then we use an angle grinder and we shoot sparks at people.
Wait a second. Describe the fire thing to me again, because you did that really fast. Now, you torch your skin.
I take the palm torch when it's lit on fire.
Right.
And I trace it on my skin. It's right. called flushing, and it leaves a trail of flame on my arm.
Okay.
And then I put it out before, without actually burning myself.
I've seen that. So I just wanted to give people a taste of what to expect out of the Mortis show. So you don't think you're upstaging Mortis at all?
No.
No? Okay. And when you have five different women doing five different things like this.
Well... We have that, and then recently I've been doing a glass walk on stage for the last song.
Oh, wow.
I have them lay out, we have the tarp laid out throughout the whole show.
Okay.
We pull up the glass, and as the song starts, I walk out on the glass. I'm walking on it. I'm stomping on it throughout the whole song.
Wow. How do you concentrate on singing while you do that?
Just sing.
Okay. Now, Mortis, and I'm sorry, we've run out of time, and I wish you guys... I could talk to all three of you guys all day, but
I'll fill you in after about all the cool stuff.
Can
we
give
up.
A final?
Yeah, we're going to give me. I'm gonna go ahead. Go
okay,
ahead,
so it's gonna play November 9th at 1 p.m. at Lemley North NoHo.
NoHo,
and
it's a good theater.
Yeah,
I like that one.
So come on down.
Okay, and Mortis. Now you were saying now what all the shows you have coming up for Halloween? You got a lot of stuff going.
Well, right now we have three more shows. The 28th, 29th, and Halloween night out at Monster Stadium Adelanto by Victorville. It's a giant haunted house that they're doing. We're performing there in one of the center stages, and they're also going to let me film my music video there for The Night He Came to Town. The same people that work with this haunt are also going to help me set up the designs for the sets to film the movie the night he came to town, which is Rick Spoker and his dad that worked with Fear Farm, which is now Monster Stadium. And Rick also has a band that he works with called Firing All Cylinders, and he's really cool. And yeah, that's about that on there. We have a lot of new stuff coming up. The only other show we have is in December. We're going to be taking somewhat of a downtime if the promoters and fans allow us to work on the new album, the movies, and some other stuff, and get that all ready for February.
Well, I'll put The Night He Came to Town at the end of this podcast so people can listen to it.
For those that haven't had the chance yet, go online. The album 13 Dead, The Book of Mortis, is available everywhere for download and streaming.
Right. It's even on Napster. I've got a free trial on Napster now. Okay. So how do people join the Mortis Army?
They go to the Mortis website. They click like. It's on Facebook and Instagram. We're having a website built right now, but with everything going on, it's kind of, you know.
So join on Instagram and Facebook, and you'll get all your Mortis needs met.
Yes, all our dirty and defiled ones.
Oh, yes. And you'll get music there, you'll get videos, and you'll get some of Lillian. Now, what do you got there, Lillian? What's going on there?
My event coming up this Friday night, Love and Lust Erotic Ball.
Parishes. This is Parishes.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh no, I've been to those.
I am going to.
Oh, is this the Vegas one?
No.
This is the one in Hollywood, and then Saturday, the 26th, is the one in Vegas at the Hard Rock.
Are you going to be at both?
I'm going to be at both, and at both, I'm doing my Bloodbath Fetish show. I will be doing Human Blockhead, Staple Game, Fire and Grinding.
That's all. I'm kidding, of course. you got to see all of these. It's great. And
the 25th on Friday, you have to join
RSVP.
You have to RSVP online only because the location is given to those who already have tickets.
Ah.
It's a secret discreet location.
And the Vegas one
is at the Hard Rock.
It's at the Hard Rock, and I've been to that. I've been to both, actually. LA and Vegas. Paris always throws
a
great party.
I'm a little nervous. It's my first time performing in Vegas.
Oh, wow. It's your first time. Have you ever been to Vegas?
Mm-hmm. A couple times.
Okay. Well, there you go. Now you are a Vegas regular, mm-hmm. Vegas performer. You're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. You're going to be great.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
Sure, there's not going to be that many people. Only like, you know, a couple thousand.
Only a couple thousand. Anyway, Pete's giving me the sign. It's time to go. But follow me, Goth Comedian, on all social media. I've got shows coming up. Go to my Facebook page, my Instagram page, gothcomedian.com. Everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week and a happy Halloween. Bye.
Ooh.
Sorry. Right.